Welcome to the Liminalist Podcast Between, episode 238. This is the audio version of yesterday's YouTube spontaneous presentation on the COVID virus, or rather my direct experiences of people's responses and reactions to the allegations of the virus in my own town.
There's a rock inside my chest.
Alright, so that worked. It was preventing me from doing it on the other tab. But it seems as though I am now live. I thought maybe I was too live a wire to be released into the newosphere. Anyway, here I am. This was a last minute thing. I was working in the thrift store and I thought, well, I'm just seeing and observing so much here, I should write something down. And I thought, well, actually I could just talk about it, and that way I could turn the YouTube transcript into an essay. So this is kind of a spoken word, well, it's not an essay. I doubt it's going to be an essay. This is not so much about a think piece as a sharing of observations about the situation. I could say the global situation, but of course I'm not able to observe the global situation. I'm only able to observe the local situation in a small town called Hope. And what I thought was that I could use this as a microcosm. I got the Hope standard here, and this is one of the things that prompted me to want to really go on record about this, because the cognitive dissonance becomes quite intense when I look at what the mainstream media is reporting in my town, just the local rag that I've even appeared in and written a letter for and whatnot. Like, anyone can get into the Hope Standard, although probably not currently, and certainly I don't imagine that something I might have to say about the situation would make it in there. But seems to me that whatever's going on globally, the best but possibly the only way for us as individuals to try and get to grips with it is by taking a blood sample, a holographic fragment of the whole thing, the collective planetary experience, and analyzing that. So as in, look around, what's at the end of your fork, so to speak, and have a pretty rich opportunity for doing that, because we are running a local business, our thrift store. For those who don't know, call the new to you thrift store. My wife and I own it, and we currently are the only people who run it as well, because our staff, we had three staff members, and two of them certainly were encouraging us to close, and we weren't going to do that. So rather than close, we reduced our hours and laid off our staff, so to speak. There wasn't anything official there, but just, okay, we'll take the risks, you know, we'll take the hits, and we'll man the ship in this crisis, in this storm. So we've reduced the hours and the days from 7 days a week, 9:30 to 5 p.m., to 5 days a week, 11 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. What we've discovered is that our profits have not reduced. There was a rocky patch for about a week where it seemed like it was pretty bad, but it was still worth staying open, seeing as we didn't have to pay any staff. But since that time, I'd say our sales have gone back to normal, even if you don't adjust them for the reduced hours, as in we're making the same in a shorter day, more or less on average, as we were with a longer day. So this to me suggests that, well, things are evening out, people are adapting to the changed hours and shopping in more condensed time period, which is a point I'm going to get to shortly. And also perhaps that because all the other shops, including thrift shops, are closed, we're picking up some of the slack for that. I don't really notice many new customers, Also, most of the shops in town, or many, are not open. So people who just want to have a shopping experience and interact with people have the opportunity to do so at our thrift store. And they have an unusual opportunity for interacting, I would say, because we're not imposing any kind of social distancing. And I've noticed our customers aren't really observing it either, and we could care less, frankly. Whereas in the supermarkets, I noticed that there's a certain amount of tension between the customers and the seller, the whatever you call them, checkout people. Nothing major, but still it's there. So our thrift store is acting as something of a hub of, I would say, sanity. Others might say a responsibility, but so far nobody has, and this is one of the sources of cognitive dissonance for me, is how come we're not getting a lot of flack for staying open and for not particularly observing the rules and for not taking the COVID virus seriously. The other thing that we've been able to observe, one of the main things, is by talking to our customers, we found that very few, I don't think, either my wife or I have spoken to anyone, actually, I spoke to somebody today, so I've exaggerated there, but it's very unusual. Fine, if we ask a customer, first of all, do you know anyone who's got sick? There seems to be a general no there, with a few qualifications here, there, they heard about this, or a cousin in some other country, and so on, but basically it's a no to that. And then, with a little probing, how seriously do you take this, or what do you think is going on? It's almost unanimous that our customer base believes that this whole thing is exaggerated, if not entirely fabricated, and that there's something else going on entirely. Now, there's quite a spectrum there, and I won't get into that. The main point is that almost all of our customers do not believe the mainstream accounts, the numbers. They do not believe that we're involved in a global pandemic currently. That's probably a tautology, isn't it? A pandemic. And this of course includes people who watch weird videos on YouTube and talk about the New World Order and so on, but it also includes people who are not interested or aware in those things. They're simply not believing it. They're not necessarily coming up with a different version, although even some of these people are suggesting their own theories or opinions, which are a lot closer to paranoid YouTube videos than they are to the mainstream narrative. So, the most recent thing, I guess I'll start with that before I get to the paper that kind of strengthened my desire to talk about this, to share my experience, was somebody came into the shop yesterday, a young guy, and he mentioned that his family, his sister, his cousins works in the hospitals, and nurses and doctors. I mean, he has family members who are in the medical establishment in Mission, which is near Vancouver. He said that they don't understand what's going on when they read in the newspapers. The figures and the descriptions and the accounts, they're really puzzled, because their experience working in the hospital is that nothing like this is going on. There's no mad virus attack, you know, it's just an ordinary, everything's ordinary. I mean, there's flu and whatnot, and okay, some people test positive. He didn't give very many details, but the specific detail he gave is that they have access to all the numbers because they're within the medical establishment, and the numbers are entirely different from the ones they're reading in the mainstream media. He said they're about half. And obviously that's a very significant fact, you know, not quite from a horse's mouth, but secondhand. It's now third hand, you're getting it through me, and so on and so forth. But nonetheless, I heard it with my own ears from a trustworthy source. And you know, apart from anything else, it indicates, you know, how naive it is to argue, oh, well, it couldn't possibly be all these people keeping it secret or pretending that there's a pandemic when there isn't, all these professionals, you've got to trust them. Well, they're not speaking up about it. They're probably too confused and bewildered. They don't understand what's going on, and they don't want to risk their jobs, and they don't want to be irresponsible. And there's this enormous consensus. And so, yeah, essentially they're in a state of confusion and bewilderment rather than indignation or outrage, which is what would motivate people to speak up. But even there, of course, the fear of consequences might override that outrage. So anyway, I'm gonna get to this paper, because I actually read pretty much the whole thing. So the Hope Stand comes out every week. It costs a dollar. And for the last few weeks, everything, every single article in it is about COVID-19. Which is obviously very exciting for them, because basically they never have anything to report about. There's never any news in the Hope Standard, but now suddenly it's full of news. But it's all, it's just a replication of the mainstream narrative. So what I'd say this is an example of his mimesis in action. But what I want to juxtapose, what I want to present here is the juxtaposition between the mimesis that you're going to see in here and here and here, which is the it's a trickle down, it's a top down mimesis that officials and a certain class of people in my town are getting the narrative from authority, from government and mainstream media sources, and then they're replicating it, and they're trying to embody it, they're trying to enact it, they're trying to enforce it. So juxtapose that with what I'm seeing in our thrift store, where we're modeling something completely different and people are also imitating that. I would say not in a slavish way, not in a fear-based way, but with relief and gratitude. Oh, thank God you're open, and thank you for being open, and we really appreciate it. And I mean, if people are talking about social distancing and the COVID, it's with skepticism and not with fear and awe, and they're not whispering either. They don't have to whisper. All right, so on the front page, Hope RCMP deal with new type of police call public health complaints. Property crime is down while family violence saw a small increase. Now, that's been predicted that family violence would go up when people were forced to stay indoors together for sustained periods of time. Police anticipated a drop in calls, and while they did see less property crime, that wasn't the bit I wanted to read. It was this. Public health directives to social distance, bans on personal service businesses being open, bans on dining for restaurants, and rules to quarantine after return home from abroad. So this is relevant to us as a business. Like, so far, there's been no legal mandate for us to close. But it could happen. As a side thing, I feel intuitively that we've passed a peak COVID point. I think it's going to level off soon, and I don't think it's going to get worse this time around. So I'm not in any way alarmed or concerned about what may happen. But at the same time, can't rule it out. It reminds me. A customer came in yesterday who had read my blog piece, which I recommend to people, my wife, and my thesis about COVID-19 being part of a reset of the economy, what I would now call a controlled demolition, in order to put up the new freedom tower of a universal basic income, socialist, carbon-based economy, whatever the fuck it turns out to be, pardon my French. Anyway, he came in and he mentioned that he had seen, and I'm not sure how reliable this person is as a source, just didn't seem quite so stable, but still, it sounded believable what he said. He said that he's, on two occasions, he's seen police I think it was both times late at night, setting up cordons in town, blocking off certain parts of the town, just a small, you know, just a couple of streets, and with out-of-town police with dogs, as if they were creating a checkpoint, but they weren't actually doing anything. And then after a couple of hours, they picked everything up and moved on. He said he saw that happen twice, and he thought it looked to him like they were doing some sort of drill. Anyway, that was a side point. Returning to this article. Okay, and this is an important point, I think. Stats do not show how many of these types of calls police received, as in health, public health complaints is what they're being called, but they included calls about restaurants being in operation, people not keeping 2 meters away from one another, and others not quarantining properly. So this is ordinary citizens policing each other. And obviously, as the business that we're staying open and all the rest of it, it's possible that there have been complaints about us, but if so, we haven't heard anything about it yet. But obviously the larger subject, excuse me for making this noise, the larger subject is people policing themselves. What level is that going to get to? I have a friend in Mexico, and he in Baja California, and he said that even though there's military police policing citizens on the street, some of the citizens are also getting involved now, driving around in pickup trucks to see if anybody's breaking the quarantine rule, and setting up checkpoints outside town to make sure that out-of-towners don't come into town. So kind of like, you can imagine anyway, right? Bored rednecks, guys with too much time on their hands, maybe they can get their shotguns out, maybe that'd be a bit risky, but they get to drive around like they're in an episode of Walking Dead and really feel like they're living the dream. And at the same time, of course, they're aligning with the power. They may not be gullible enough to stay at home or whatever. They may sense that something's going on. They don't want to just stay at home and watch Netflix. They want to be part of what's going on. So that they find a way to go out and be, you know, to still move around freely, but as a vigilante task force that the police can then also utilize. So there's an article on page 2, no local officers with COVID-19. Well, isn't that a relief? The RCMP announced Friday that officers will soon be enforcing mandatory quarantines for people newly arrived from abroad. This could include house checks and fines of $750,000 and 6 months in prison for people who violate the order. But those found in willful or reckless contravention of the act could be found, as the typo, bad grammar, could be fined up to $1 million and could face up to 3 years in prison. And then it mentions that increased family violence is not very much increased, according to this, about 25%, but still, it's a relevant data point. 3 years in prison. For, you know, walking arm in arm with your wife or whatever it might be. Anyway, I'm not here to stir the paranoia, but I mean, this is definitely not my intention. I'm sure that everyone watching, listening, this is already plenty paranoid enough and fully aware that something weird is going on and that the virus is the least of our problems currently. Although, of course, there may be, you know, we may not have unleashed the virus yet. To keep that in mind. Anyway, I'm stirring paranoia a bit here, I apologise. This is the mayor. This guy is the reason that I voted for the first and last time in my life. Just to try and not get him in. And because I know the ex-mayor now, and he's one of our shoppers, our customers. And he seemed like a decent enough guy, like a mechanic, just works on cars, and pretty ordinary guy. Whereas this guy brought McDonald's into our little town, right? So he's one of those guys, he's a corporate flunky, lackey, and so that's why he got in by a landslide this time, despite my breaking a lifetime's principle and actually voting. Anyway, he's done an interview thing here, and there's a couple of things in here he says. when he's asked, you know, what does he want people to do? What's the message? It's pretty basic. Follow the protocol. Stay at home. We don't need you to visit right now. Very ironic, because little town of Hope has got this thing called Vantage Hope, which is all geared towards bringing out of towners in and helping the economy to build. And now they're saying, don't come here. Just stay away, please. We don't want you here. Actually, there's more of that, but it's further on inside the paper. So, next article, virtually all Hope businesses affected by COVID-19. This is written by Emily Peacock, who I know personally. She interviewed me about my voting for the mayor, and she did an article on our thrift store and what a wonderful kind of community hub it was for helping people in need and bringing people together. So, but now she's got with the program and is just pushing the party line. First line of her article: there isn't a business in Hope that hasn't been affected by COVID-19, says Hope's new economic development officer, Lyle Downey. Well, we know that's not true, because our business really hasn't been affected. I also suspect it's kind of self-evidently untrue, because grocery stores have probably been booming in our town. They certainly sold out of toilet paper and peanut butter and popcorn. So, you know, I think we're taking a bit of liberty there to hammer home a point. Now is not the time to let down our guard. Saying, well, the rate of new patients has steadily decreased. Maybe we can be optimistic. BC is holding the line. As Dr. Bonnie Henry put it, this is our time when we need to keep our firewalls strong. We all can stand proud, knowing that we are doing our bit. Don't you get tingles? A lump in the throat. And the next one, pandemic shows need for improved care home staffing. Current COVID-19 crisis is revealing gaps in our society that have been all too easy to ignore. I just thought that there was sort of a tip of an iceberg to that one. Gaps in our society where free will can slip through, where autonomous spontaneous action, where creative self-sustaining businesses, well, who knows, you know, how many gaps they're trying to plug up now, the eponymous they.
Thank you.
it's more complex than a they. I'm not, I have to really stress here, even though I'm sure some of you don't have any problem with conspiracy theories, I'm really not a conspiracy theorist, but we don't get to define ourselves anymore. We just get defined, and basically I am, as far as both people who hate conspiracy or hate the kind of stuff I'm presenting, and people who love it tend to see it that way. But really, it's not. This is very open. It's very long-term social engineering programs. They're not criminal unless we're going to take a moral position, which I'm not saying we shouldn't. But I'm saying they're not technically criminal. Well, some of them are. I mean, lying. But see, lying to the public isn't a crime anymore. Because Obama made propagandizing, domestic propaganda, legal in his thing, right? So we need to understand, if we're gonna use terms, like, what do they mean, and are they accurate, and are we understanding what's going on, and does it really fit? Now, I do some theorizing, and yes, there are men in rooms and women in rooms working this stuff out, all that's true, but it's a lot more complex and nuanced, and if you look at it carefully and closely, it doesn't actually fit the most basic criteria of conspiracy, which is secret criminal activity. It's not secret. And that's part of the thing that makes it so cognitive dissonance creating. There is this aspect of theatre, so that makes it seem like secret. Like, it's a magician. Like, is a magician being secret? Not really. He's doing a big show, and you're paying money for the show, and then he's doing a bit of sleight of hand over there. It's not secret. It's just that he got your attention to go somewhere else, and you paid him money to do that. So, and then he does the thing, and you go, wow, that's amazing. Well, that's kind of what's going on here now. And people are going, wow, that's amazing, in weird different ways. They're approving the measures that are being taken. I mean, this goes beyond manufactured consent into, it's almost like orgasmic consent or something. It's like we've been massaged to the point of this collective terror orgasm, where we're all just gushing with praise and gratitude for the iron boot to come crushing down on our skulls. Of course, when I say we, I'm not talking about myself and the people listening here, but there's a collective thing that we're observing, probably. And so then the onus is on we, that who are aware of this, to, well, there's got to be a way to see this and approach this that isn't the conspiracy theory way, because that's controlled opposition, that's controlled demolition, they're not being secret about it. They're presenting it in such a way that the sleepers can say, oh, that's conspiracy theory, and just ignore it, whereas the wakers will get obsessed about it and cry conspiracy and run around trying to wake up the sleepers, and it's never going to work. So I get lots of comments, but I don't have time to read them. Well, I mean, I do have time, but I just want to stay on track. That was all a big digression there. It was a bit of context. Okay, so here's the next one. This is part of the rest of the mayor's interview. He says, one reader is asking why non-essential stores are still open. That's us. We're a non-essential store. I did hear that in England, I don't know if we can say passing new laws, but whatever, the protocol is now including this thing about non-essential shopping, like house paints and things like this that you're not allowed to buy. So yeah, it's a thrift store, we're basically non-essential. Even though we're very essential, actually. People need blankets, they need clothes, they need kitchen stuff, and they need community. Most essential thing of all. Beside God. One reader, okay, that one. Because the province has not done anything with that. Okay, so he's saying, the mayor's saying, the province, we haven't addressed these non-essential shoppers and retailers yet. You're allowed to stay open, whether it's the dollar store that people complain to me about. So the mayor has been receiving complaints about the dollar store, which I'd say is probably about on the same level of essentiality as us in a conventional view. We're much more essential because we give away food and we give away clothing and things of that kind. But in terms of the actual products that we sell or give away, it's a similar thing. Well, clothing, we've got clothing. So, yeah, we're a bit more essential, but still more or less similar ballpark. Now, less and less are operating, and they really cut back their hours in town. I think it's working well, says the mayor. If you wander the streets, as I do, to check, he hasn't come in to see us yet, and read the signs on the doors, and many businesses have cut back their hours. Now, I underline that because we've also cut down our hours, as I said, and one of the ways that that's been effective is it concentrates the custom, the business, because people adapt to our hours. So that essentially means we're busier, but for a shorter period. So if the mayor and his handlers and, you know, the whole edifice of social engineering and of controlled demolition of the economy, if this is what it is, were sincere, they would not encourage reduced business hours. Now, okay, that does mean there's less people out on the street, but not really, because most people in Hope drive around, actually. So I don't think even that's a good argument, but it's certainly self-evident, anyone who just thought about it for 5 seconds, that if you reduce the hours, then you're going to concentrate the customers into a smaller time period, therefore there's going to be less social distance, unless you have the rule like our baker, which the mayor didn't mention, which is he only lets 2 people in the store at the same time. As I say, we don't have any rules like that, and I would say our shop has been, if anything, more crowded than usual. So as I joked to one customer today, from the point of view of these local social engineers or wannabe social engineers, we're like a death hub with a Death Star of Hope. You know, there should be a heated missile headed our way any time soon. And that's a big part of my cognitive dissonance. Why aren't we being told how irresponsible we are? I suggest it's because these people don't even believe their own BS belief system. Not really. But that may be overly optimistic on my part. It's still relatively early in the game. So I'd be interested if there's any comments on here that are telling me, shut up, you asshole, this is real. If there is anyone there, then do it again, because I might miss it. And not that I want dissenting voices, but I do want to hear, like, if you really think that there's a deadly virus going around and it's our responsibility and our duty to control it, as the Hope Standard has dedicated pretty much all of its space to convincing me, then I want to hear it. I want to hear it from somebody who's actually got some basis for it besides, guzzling at the trough of mainstream media. Because I can't see it. I just can't see it. It's really baffling me to compare simultaneously my experience in the thrift store, I think that was pretty much it, I saved the last bit, the best for last, with what I'm reading in the paper. Like, I read paper, look up, talk to customers, two realities, parallel realities, completely opposite, completely incompatible, somehow coexisting. What's going on? Is this invasion of the body snatchers? So the mayor says, I would say the majority of our community gets it. There's still some out there that still don't think, that I don't think are taking this as serious as they should. And when they're wandering around and going to the different communities and driving through, there's still some people that aren't getting it. But overall, I'm pleased with how the community stepped up. It's not just a good neighbour thing. It's a civic responsibility to do what we've asked you to do to help stop the spread of the COVID-19 virus. See, good neighbors. That's. I mean, could. It's like Orwell could have gone so much further. I mean, this is Orwell. The sequel is rewriting itself or writing itself. Because the whole thing about a good neighbor, I mean, that's a Christian ethic, and love thy neighbor as thyself. It's a very profound principle that very few of us can live by, if any of us. It requires a radical shift of consciousness to begin to live, to treat one's neighbor as thyself, to love oneself and to love thy neighbor and thy brother and thy sister and God, as God, and to love God by loving each other. I mean, these are, my God, and this is the language that's being co-opted now for police your neighbor. If you love thy neighbor, you will police thy neighbor. Anyway, hopefully I'm containing my indignation here because it's pretty strong. And then the mayor, this is the coup de grace. This is going to be a while yet, and who knows what the new normal is going to be, so to speak. No one knows. I beg to differ. This is all new to us all. So the mayor certainly learnt the lingo. Get ready for the new normal. All right, so I did say, a while ago that I wasn't going to come on YouTube and rant, and hopefully I haven't really been ranting, although I know I've been speaking at a higher energy level than usual, but it's just because I'm quite excited. I mean, I feel quite good about this all around. So far, so good. Fingers crossed behind my back. Because, well, I mean, things are going quite well, specifically with the thrift store and more generally. But I'm just curious, what's going on? How is this working is what I'm curious to try and explore. I don't know if I'll be able to. Like I said, this wasn't going to be a spoken essay. I just wanted to share those experiences, and now I've done so. But the cognitive dissonance is around this experience of seeing something that's very obviously exaggerated and very easy to see the strings or see the sets, or to observe that there's a theatrical element to what's going on, and to find that there's kind of a consensus about that. So it seems to me, based on the exchanges that I'm having in the thrift store and online and all the rest of it, and maybe I'm creating an echo chamber, but I don't see. It would be pretty hard to get a more lived, tangible, down in the trenches experience of what's going on than running a thrift store. I mean, or working at a hospital, obviously, would be a different kind of thing, but still, I mean, I think it's a pretty reliable way to gauge. Okay, now Hope's a small town, but it's not that far from Vancouver. It's really part of the same larger community of BC. So, it seems to me almost self-evident that there's no pandemic, really, currently yet. I have to put the yet because, something could happen, something could change, and boom, say, oh well, you're going to eat those words, aren't you? Or you have to eat those words now, don't you? But that still wouldn't change the fact that. I don't see convincing evidence for a pandemic. I just see a very, can't even say persuasive, but a very committed and dedicated attempt to present evidence or fabricate evidence, or to just rally the people into this belief. and that it's been very, very successful. But I don't see how. I don't even see who. That's actually second or third hand. Second hand, really, is that I know people who know people who have become unusually compliant and unusually unsuspicious, unusually trusting of the government, and have begun to say things like, oh, you shouldn't be so negative, you shouldn't be questioning this, that's such a dark perspective, the government's trying to help us, it's just doing a good, you know, the best job it can to solve this situation. So yeah, I do hear stories of that kind. But I don't really encounter them. And as I say, this isn't just my own echo chamber of my internet presence and my little audience of readers and listeners. This is working in a thrift store with people, you know, just ordinary people coming off the street. So there's something here that I can't particularly get my head around yet, but it has to do with LARPing. Theatre Mimesis LARPing. Probably one of the major variables in here that make it work is that people want the apocalypse. They want to be living in interesting times. And yeah, in certain ways, to a certain degree, they want to stay at home and watch Netflix and stuff. So some of the measures that are being told to take are attractive to them. The experience of feeling like you're living in a global crisis is appealing. The idea that you can be virtuous simply by staying at home, smoking pot and watching Netflix, very appealing. You're one of the good guys. You're showing what you're made of. All of these things seem to be appealing to a certain demographic or a certain kind of psychology whereby people, and I get stuck on this people, but it is people, or people who think they're people, are agreeing to suspend disbelief out of a combination of fear and therefore the triggered trust response, Stockholm Syndrome, Stalin and his chicken. Government's been terrorizing the people for so long that when it really brings out the big guns like now, like Stalin's chicken, they'll just run straight into the government's concentration camps and say, protect us, microchip us, keep us safe from you, oh great dictator. So there's that. That's all fairly basic, you know, that stuff. I mean, that's been functioning and effective for millennia. But then there's this other thing, which is where the LARPing comes in, that people want to believe it because it's entertaining, really. I mean, I suppose that's part of the fear programming, is that people are more and more dissociated from physical reality and they want to escape more and more into fantasy. But of course, the harder, the worse physical reality gets, the harder it is to just block it out. So the darker the fantasies have to be, or the more realistic they have to be. So why not create a whole global Masonic sorcery theater, I use that term for Mike B if he's here, that people can play act. They can actually participate in it. Way, I'm part of this thing. And because they get to be the good guys. And because there's only one bad guy, and that's this virus. Anyway, I don't have the answers, of course. I suppose I just recommend, as I've done, keeping the focus as local as possible. And I mean, one of the things that I was saying to a customer today, and that I've observed for myself, sales call on the answering machine. Those bastards. Let me just close the thing. Just brought up a lot of anger that has no object there. That's a mechanized system. It's just part of the whole thing, and it's take it personally, and it's incredibly annoying. And anyway, I won't get into what I do with my anger, what I would like to do with my anger, but I stayed on it because that's what's happening right now, and so it's a way to illustrate that as well, like what's actually happening right now, and like where's the information in it, and because it seems that it is relevant to what I was about to talk about, which is that we are being manipulated, we are being triggered, and one of the ways that current people watching and listening today are likely to be triggered is with a kind of indignation or outrage or frustration with stupid people, even if we're not encountering them directly. Like I say, it's very rare that a person comes into the thrift store and says, well, they never come in and say you shouldn't be open or something like that. Then I would get annoyed. But I mean, they just are repeating, wearing the mask and repeating all the fear stuff. That's very rare. Hardly happens at all. And if that does happen, I don't really get annoyed with them. But I feel a bit sorry for them. But when I read the paper, and particularly if it's the mayor or somebody who's in this position of influence, I do start to get angry. I do start to feel a certain amount of outrage. And a big part of that, I mean, because one doesn't generally get to identify a social engineer in that way, although one can, of course, look and find them, they're not that hard to find. But certainly, what's more apparent is the people who are buying, endorsing, reselling, replicating the agenda. And there's a strong desire, I think, in many of us, is to wake them the fuck up, or try to. And one of the ways, one of the primary ways we would do that is to get more informed about what's going on, whether it's the Rockefeller Report or Vent 201 or Bill Gates and his biometric surveillance or whatever else it is, or horticulture. I mean, as in a site for information on those things, not as part of the conspiracy. And then we can help to educate people. Well, there is something in that, if people are open to it. But there's two things that happen as a result of that, at least potentially. One is we get over-focused on trying to change somebody's mind, and that's never a good thing. Like, why are we trying to change their mind? Why are we trying to wake them up? What's in it for us? What do we think? Are we trying to save them? Do they want to be saved? Can they be saved? What kind of salvation are we offering? Do we really know what's going on to the point that we actually know where the exit of this hell realm is? Or are we just saying, we're in hell, look around? You know, because that might not be helpful. They might just have a meltdown. So that's number one. And number two is that if we're going to try and educate them, we have to get more educated ourselves. So that means we're spending more time focusing at the minutiae of social engineering, long-term agendas, to hypnotize the masses and turn them into vessels for parasitic, mimetic agendas, you know, ideologies. And that could be a way that we ourselves, as this, and this could be a subtler level of control and possession. So I say, be very cautious about getting too fixated on what you think is going on here, because if you're right, in the generals, and I'm guessing, as I haven't had time to look at all these comments, but I'm guessing that most of us here are probably on the same page about what's going on, with different, you know, there's a lot of variables and so on and so forth, but you know, the simplified version isn't very complicated at all, is it? Fake a crisis and you'll create a real one. Create a real crisis and then you can roll out the solution. I mean, Christ, even David Icke has this as his thing, problem, reaction, solution. It's not rocket science. It might be incredibly complicated and sophisticated to engineer, which is why conspiracy theories probably do more harm than good, because they make it look simple, and then they, from there, we have to end up falling into the trap of kind of archonic attribution to these human agencies, which maybe they have, of course, but still, it's a premature leak, where they've got some kind of blanket control as opposed to something that, number one, is a lot more complicated and sophisticated and nuanced than just some kind of puppet master pulling strings, and number two, and inseparable from that, we are the agents of control that are being controlled to implement the control system. This is why it's such a key point that love thy neighbor, it means police thy neighbor in the New World Order, because that's the only way it works, is if we actually become possessed by our possessors. We fully consent to being possessions of our possessors and instruments of their will, whatever we're going to say that they is. So the resistance and the rebellion isn't going to work. There's a controlled opposition, and to a certain extent, we are it. If we're not careful, anyway. If we're in opposition, then we're being controlled, or we're controllable. We might not have been controlled into a position of opposition, but once we get squarely in a position of opposition, then we're easy to control. Because we're reacting. Just reacting to the stimuli. It's not about, do you obey or do you disobey? It's, are you actually gauging your actions as a reaction to the mandates, the protocols, to the decrees, you know, the archonic decrees. And there's the dichotomy of disobey or obey, the false dichotomy, or, you know, it's a lose-lose proposal there. There's also ignore or get fixated on. Like, it doesn't work to ignore what's going on, but nor does it work, nor is it going to be helpful to just get stuck on it. Like, once you've seen it, okay, move on. It's, you're only looking at the obstacles so you can see the way around them, not so you can see what they're made of and where they come from, what the date is, and, you know, what factory they are, what's the serial number, all this stuff. We're just trying to go, we're going around them. So you only have enough time to just see the shape of them as you're going around them. Anyway. So the thing I felt was unfinished there is this mimetic theatre, live-action role-play apocalypse that we're in currently. I mean, there's been a lot of jokes about how disappointing the apocalypse is. Well, that's because it's a counterfeit. You see, the real apocalypse is something that happens internally, and that is initiated by God, not by man. Now, men are instruments. We are instruments of God, of course, but the apocalypse is kind of outside the box. That's divine intervention. So there's a level there, and I'm not saying we can't get to it as human beings, on the contrary, but if and when we do get to that level where the apocalypse is something really experiential, then we're seeing divine intervention happen in our own lives, whether it's happening in the world. I forgot what I was going to say with that, probably fittingly enough. It won't have anything to do with this world. This world is the veil that gets drawn aside. It's gone. So, yeah, I think in some ways this is a last ditch attempt that we're going to be seeing to keep our attention. It's like a bad TV show. It just, the worse it gets, the more they got to amp the effects and the melodrama and the deaths and the mayhem. Just keep people watching, because once they turn away or turn off the set, that's it, you lost them. I mean, I don't want to be clickbait, and I don't feel that there's... I do feel that it's a dead end to just pursue conspiracy theorizing, so-called, or mapping hell, as I call it, without a clear aim in mind. Now, it doesn't mean that you have a clear... We have a clear aim when we start. I certainly started mapping hell 30 years ago, and I had very little idea. But certainly I became more and more cognizant of what I was doing, and that in the last few years that was congruent with me realizing that it had to end at a certain point. Now I would say that this is also collectively true. There's canaries in the coal mine, there are pioneers or what have you, people who go into things so that you don't have to. And I said recently in my blog post, I'm the bridge between unenlightenment and enlightenment. I'm not enlightened. I'm unenlightened, but my focus on the dark side of human existence and consciousness, which is unenlightenment, you know, very broad strokes, so we're all on the dark side, except for, you know, those few who have crossed over, it was never about anything but getting to the light. It's just that I couldn't find it, right? So I was just groping through the darkness for as long as it took for my eyes to adjust or to find my orientation in such a way I could start to sense where the light was and then to start moving towards it. And so now I see the light, but it's not so much that I necessarily can just go straight for it. There are still things, still obstacles to get around, still things to understand on my way there. But to bring it back to this more experiential question about loving thy neighbor and community, because, you know, there's this, another side to policing thy neighbor, and that's trying to wake them up. If you're trying to wake your neighbor up, is that different from policing them? You're basically saying you're thinking wrong, you're believing this lie, you're a shill for the man, you're working for the matrix. All these things, they may even be true, but so what? Like, if your neighbor or your family member or, God forbid, your partner is start spouting, you know, government mandates, and you start thinking that they've been taken over by an alien virus, probably it's a good time to suspend relations with that person rather than try and save them. I mean, well, obviously it could go either way, but you have to consider, if that person's been taken over, well, maybe you didn't know them that well to begin with. And by the same token, maybe there are other people out there or other souls that you haven't noticed. And for other reasons, more superficial, what have you, you haven't given them the time of day. But actually, there is something more fruitful to pursue there. So, I mean, that's essentially why I wasn't doing YouTube anymore, why I've stopped doing YouTube, is that I want to tighten and concentrate and deepen the connections I have with the people that I found or have found me, so that together we're creating a community, whether it's online or offline or both, or energetic or invisible, and it's all of these different things, so that we're together, we're moving towards the exit. And so there's less and less time to spend on those who don't want to leave hell. They're really quite happy with things and themselves. They're not happy, but they're stuck in, and it doesn't have to be a judgment or a condemnation, because it's not about some universal thing. Oh, God hasn't chosen them and he's chosen me and mine. It's just that I don't know how to work with those people, so I'm going to stick with the people that I can work with. And it's very surprising, you know, that I find those people working in the thrift store as well as online, where I can create a hub of people who have shared interests, as opposed to in the thrift store, where it's nothing to do with shared interests, but it's a real world outpost for people to come in from the storm. And there's something natural about the way that energy moves like water, that it, it goes where it needs to go, and that we find one another, as long as our focus is on the right thing. And the thrift stores kind of worked like that for me, because it allows me to focus on being physical, being in the body, while at the same time sorting good stuff from bad stuff, which is an alchemical task, you could say, minute by minute, sorting the seeds. And then, of course, interacting with downtrodden people. So that was a fit for me. So I guess I'll bring it back to that and maybe start to wind up there, that there is an I it seems to me as an example that it's odd because it's my example, I'm giving you this as an example, but I feel it's an example for me also, that what's happening with the thrift store shows that it is possible to create islands of peace, sanity, innovation, spontaneity, and of loving community, of really loving thy neighbor in the midst of what's happening, and to somehow, and for those to become all the more valuable and meaningful because of what's happening, because of the closing down and the fear and the panic and the ignorance and the delusion and the dementia and the suspicion and the mistrust and the loneliness and the anxiety and all these things that are growing, and the threat of a kind of pathological control that will stop at nothing until it's got everything under its thumb. All of this is in a certain sense driving people not just into mad forms of behavior and compliance and obedience and shutdowns and despair, but also into the openings that do exist, the islands of peace that we create for ourselves, as ourselves. They will just snatch those who are sufficiently desperate in the right way to find them. And I don't know, you know, how it's going to play out a day from now, or even I could hear it's happened this afternoon that we get shut down or that there's a complaint. You know, the way things are going, according to the mayor, we could end up being thrown in jail for 3 years if things become more formalized and we don't comply, which possibly we wouldn't. I don't know. Impossible to say, and I'm not trying to paint a gloomy picture, but you don't need me to do that. I don't actually know how long this is going to work, but it is working now. And the fact that it's working is it's not a conventional miracle. It's not walking on water or turning water into wine, but it doesn't support the facts that we're being given in more ways than one. It doesn't support the narrative around COVID-19 and how everybody, you know, is going along with this and so on. I mean, actually, there are protests in Vancouver, so I think there's a bit of a turnaround there, I think, is already happening. But this isn't like that. This is just people who just haven't been convinced. Like Nat from the bookshop joked with me yesterday. I said, you know, I'm not, my customers just aren't convinced. And he said, yeah, well, they need to put bodies, to start putting bodies out on the streets and stuff to be more convincing. That's what it's like here in Hope. It's like, sorry, but this is just not good enough theatre. We're not, you know, we want our money back. We're not, why would we pretend to go along with this if it's so obviously not convincing? So that's a strange thing in and of itself. And that indicates that actually people aren't as stupid and susceptible as you might think, and as that we're being kind of led to believe by the media, which isn't just reporting, and James Corbett talks about it, isn't just reporting what the government's doing and what the protocol is and what we should do, it's also reporting what people are doing in a congratulatory way, perhaps, or possibly sometimes in a critical way, but certainly there's definitely a part of the narrative is look how people really are following the protocol, and isn't it wonderful we're all working together here. So that narrative itself is partially fabricated, and based on my experience, largely fabricated. That's number one, that things aren't the way they seem in terms of the mainstream media, but things also maybe aren't the way they seem in terms of the alternate media that's presenting this very elaborate and sophisticated and long-term draconian agenda to strip us of our autonomy and our freedom. and that there'll be, you know, nowhere to turn to in the end. There'll just be a complete smartified planet with everybody with microchip. Well, I mean, I never believed that anyway, but based on this example of the thrift store, and it's still early days, but the fact we haven't even heard about anyone bad-mouthing us yet in over a month is incredible. We don't go on Facebook, but we know people on Facebook. So nobody has come by and said anything about anybody criticizing us, and that's incredible. That seems incredible. It's like we're invisible or something. So, yeah, you know, I don't want to count any chickens or any phoenixes before they've emerged from the fire, but it does suggest to me or confirm something that I've long believed and experienced in different ways, that there is something else here that is happening. There is another law that certainly transcends social law, government law, but even perhaps transcends physical law, or what we think of as reality, because what we think of reality isn't reality. Not really. It's a socialized simulation of it that we've internalized and so become carriers of, and we maintain it. We're the guards as well as the inmates in this system. And as we disidentify from our constructed identities and unalign from those prison agendas, then we become free, and free in such a way that it's like the prison really never really existed except in our minds. Now, we may still see people that are imprisoned or believe they're imprisoned, and they may still be acting in ways that are threatening to each other, you know, policing each other. And of course, we may have some experience of being policed by them, but at a certain point and to a certain extent, we will cease to become noticeable or comprehensible to those people, I think. That's what I think, anyway. And or they will see that there's something else possible, and so they will just gradually come over to the light because they want to shop. They want to, you know, meet and hang out and have experience of community, and something in their bodies is telling them something very different from what the mainstream media and their authority figures from their parents on up are telling them. And fear, false evidence appearing real, doesn't rule their nervous systems. Because that's really what it comes down to. You know, what's happening in our nervous system? Like, what are we holding on to our nervous system that then, like the fascia lockdown, the internal lockdown, that then regulates and controls our own behaviors, reduces our capacity for spontaneity and for responsibility, and keeps us cordoned to a pre-designated set series and sequence of reactions, actions and reactions, programmed. Anyway, so I guess this is a message of hope from hope. I'm quite excited and quite amazed by our experience of this so far. Something's being revealed. We don't quite know what it is. I mean, something about us as human beings and humanity as a whole, and where we find ourselves in that configuration. There's something very profound there. I mean, it does look like a bifurcation. I want to be very cautious about this, but it does seem to me that there is, as I said about the thrift store, the alchemical process, turning lead into gold, of separating wheat from chaff, I think that it's at least worth considering that that's something that we're seeing now and that we're part of, whether we like it or not. And yeah, the sheep and the goats, maybe it's been flipped over. I'd kind of rather be a goat than a sheep in terms of the associations with those particular animals, even though I'm a ram. What was I going to say? I had an unfinished sentence there. Well, maybe I'll just leave it unfinished. Yeah, it's something not to be thought about or talked about too much, but to be observed and responded to, and there doesn't have to be any kind of judgment or superiority, inferiority, imposition or superimposition onto that phenomenon if that's what's happening. But it is very much, I think, aligning with that means that we ourselves are practicing discernment all the time, particularly around our ability to discern, like questioning and observing our motives. Who do we spend time with? What do we spend time on? Where is it leading? Where do we want to end up? Okay, well, that was quite a lot longer than I thought. As I say, I just wanted to get some thoughts and observations out, specifically around my town, and the reaction to the COVID virus, or rather to the allegations of it. If there is a purpose to me doing this on YouTube, well, there's more than one. But if there's one result I would hope to see, because, you know, if this affects you in some positive way and assists you to navigate these liminal times, I won't necessarily know that. So I guess that's one result I would hope is you contact me, jason@protonmail.com, and let me know if in some way it's been helpful. Another way would be if you participate in some of the live events that I do on Zoom, and then I can actually get to know you and I can get to interact with you and get a better sense of who exactly I'm talking to and what the results are of doing so. I will actually be using YouTube a bit in the near future, because I'm going to start a campaign for Maps of Hell, Hollywood Secret Society's global occupation, or the occupation of the global psyche. So yeah, I'll keep people posted about that, but the short version is that I'm going to self-publish it if I can raise enough funds to cover all of those costs, and then hopefully do that in the next few months. So I will use YouTube for that purpose and end. I think that's all. Thanks for everyone for commenting. I will read those comments once I sign off, and if there's anything really pressing now, I'll respond to it on YouTube at the site itself. And once again, if you haven't read the blog post I wrote with my wife called Illuminations Never Come From the Crowned, that's about I didn't even get to the controlled demolition. That's funny. Well, I didn't have a great deal to say about that, but it just occurred to me recently that that metaphor is just such a very succinct and clear one. That why did they do controlled demolitions? Well, a building is getting old. It's going to collapse anyway, so they've got to knock it down. That's not the only reason, but it's one of the main reasons, so that they can control the demolition. They can prevent too much damage and oversee it as it happens. Well, I think that seems like a pretty exact parallel with what may be happening with the global economy, that it was seen that it wasn't stable, it was likely to collapse in a major way after 2008. Even there are papers out there anticipating 2020. So set up the charges, clear the streets literally, and detonate, let fly, let the whole thing come down, and then start building this Tower of Babel. Didn't work the first time. If at first you don't succeed, try again. Yeah, anyway, so that was a bit about control, demolition, and demo. Of course, has that double meaning about the theatre. So yeah, may you live in interesting times. You do. So may you enjoy it and make the most of those times without getting too stuck on the stories that are being spun. Remember that you are creating your own meaning. Well, not creating, you are finding your own meaning. Well, that was a bit of a slip there. You're finding your own meaning and bringing coherence to your own reality as a way to access greater reality, which is through true connection to each other, soul deep connection to one another. I will mention Dave O'Shaughnessy at this last moment, just in terms of my blog series about him and how much I encourage people who get the golden thread of what I'm doing here, which he calls the transmission. You don't have to call it anything at all. I don't know what it is really, but it's the call of the life force coming through this body to that body, those bodies over there, and where we came from, the source of all of this, that language can't contain, but nor can it completely obscure it either. And in a certain sense, it can carry it. Language can be a carrier signal for that transmission. And I encourage those of you who got a small sense or taste of that, would just be a very subtle sensation in your bodies if you did, or maybe not even that, just a little bit of a tiny aha somewhere along the way, to follow that, wherever it takes you. Actually, I shouldn't say where it's going to lead you, but if you're interested in more of my experience of that, then my writings, I could say with about Dave O'Shaughnessy, which are kind of re-evaluating, re-examining my own past writings and my own past experiences. It's like looking at hell from the outside now. I've been mapping it internally, and now I'm kind of on the threshold looking back. One last goodbye to hell. Let's see what happened back there, all those lonely days that I was wandering through the labyrinth. What exactly was going on? Dave has helped me enormously with that, and it's possible that he could help you too. We can all help each other if we are on Team Eternal. Saturn-Pluto conjunction in March. Yeah, well, and coinciding with Lent, quarantine, meaning 40 days and 40 nights. Okay, well, that's 1 hour 20, so I'm off. Bye for now. May the life force be with you.
Changes in the heart, change with the times.
Okay, that is the end of this week's podcast. I was going to air highlights from a Zoom event post Dave O'Shaughnessy, but I decided not to, as some people didn't want their parts aired, and I felt there wasn't really sufficient meat to the meeting left if I were to make those edits. So this was a last minute thing, or so I noticed. I heard that the YouTube video was doing a lot of buffering. It was very hard to watch, particularly the last half. So this is an alternate way to catch that spontaneous rant ramble. As ever, I appreciate your feedback. Keep an eye out for the Maps of Hell campaign, which I hope to be starting within the next 2 weeks. I'm doing regular live meetups, gatherings on Zoom, for various different reasons or contexts or pretexts. particularly in this time of Corona, COVID-19 lockdown for many people. I know there's more, you have more time at home, and so I want to make the most of that. So I'm doing regular and semi-irregular meetings. Wednesday mornings, I think I'll be doing, this is all Pacific time, meetings for people who have participated in Dave and are interested in what's going on there. I'm probably continuing to do a guys-only meetup to explore the secrets of the male libido, where it is, how to locate it, how to most fully and wholesomely express it. I encourage people to participate in that and or to support this podcast by donating. This is the Limitless, the podcast between. The heart changed with the times. Strangers.